Hello and welcome to this Cloud of Data podcast with your host, Paul Miller. I have been following the emerging data market space for a number of years, trying to understand the ways in which some of the companies who are beginning to appear there relate to one another and how they offer a value proposition to customers. During this series of podcasts, I'm going to be talking to stakeholders from a number of the leading players in the data market space: Microsoft, Factual, Kasabi, InfoChimps, and a number of others. Each of these podcasts will be made available on the Cloud of Data website, as well as through iTunes and perhaps a number of other syndication routes. Please feel free to check back from time to time as new episodes become available. In this conversation, I talk with Lee Dodds, CTO of Kasabi. Kasabi is a spin-off from semantic technology company Talis, and Lee talks about some of the ways in which that semantic technology background is of value when it comes to combining and reusing data. Here's Lee. Lee, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we talk about Kasabi and its place in the world of data markets, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure. It's good to talk to you again, Paul. So a little bit about me. I'm the CTO for Kasabi. I've been working on the project for nearly 2 years now. So I'm responsible for all of the product development, product strategy, and the technical strategy for what we've been building. Before that, I've been working as part of the wider platform team at Talis. I've been involved in a number of different projects. The common thread to all of those is working with organizations to help them get most out of their data, how they manage the data internally or how they publish it online. So I've been lucky enough to work with organizations like the BBC and contributed to the data.gov.uk project that was opening up open government data here in the UK. Prior to that, I worked in the publishing industry, built a platform for managing and publishing scientific research data and publications. And I guess, you know, the common thread for all of my kind of technical work has been about how best to organize, manage data, how to make it accessible either within the enterprise or online. So those are the things that really interest me.
Okay, which leads very nicely on then to Kasabi. So what is it? What is Kasabi?
Okay, so Kasabi is a data marketplace. It's a place where anyone can come and publish data. We provide all of the infrastructure to host that data and make it available online. So when you publish data in Kasabi, it's automatically wrapped in a number of APIs that are automatically deployed for every data set that we host. So it's a very simple way to get your data online and accessible to developers. And what we're trying to do is help people get the most out of their data. So whether that means getting it online or whether it means just organizing it better so that they can make better use of it in their own applications, by having an off-the-shelf infrastructure to support its managing and access, we think really help people get that value. We're also trying to help make data more discoverable and more accessible to developers. So having a marketplace environment where people can come and search and browse for data sets is important, addressing that discovery problem. Having a consistent way to access data sets through a common set of APIs can help as well, because it means that you can more easily transfer skills between data sets rather than having to learn a new bespoke API every time. And so we're also interested in helping developers find the data they need to create some really interesting, innovative applications. So we think a kind of marketplace environment that will help address discovery, access, publishing, and ultimately commercialization of data can address all of those issues.
So that requires then presumably people to want to put their data there rather than anywhere else. And it also requires them to invest a degree of faith, I guess, in your API rather than whatever they were using before. Is that a difficult conversation, or are people begging for this?
Well, I think there's a couple of different aspects to that. So I don't see that Kasabi would be the only place where data would be published. So we're not looking to try and be the sole repository of all of these interesting data sets. So to take a concrete example there, if governments are opening up data, they want to make that as accessible as possible and disseminate it as widely as possible. So it's in their interest to have that data be available in a number of different platforms in a number of different ways, so that developers have some choice about how they access it. So, we recognize that data is going to be published in a number of different ways. But we think that we can add some real value by having it in Kasabi as well, by starting to link up and contextualize some of that data, which is hard to do when it's published at kind of single publisher sites. I think it's true that that anyone putting data into Kasabi has got to have a certain amount of faith in the infrastructure that we're providing. I mean, the platform that's behind Kasabi has been in production use for quite a few years now. We've been using it to build our own products. So it's not an entirely new, untested system. There's, it's been tested out in the field. We know that it can scale to the kinds of data sets that we're hosting. But we're trying to build some sustainability around access to data by encouraging people to use open licenses where that makes sense. It helps with data portability, because then people have got freedom to move data between different systems.
And the we there that you talked about using this platform, that's Talis. Indeed, I was once upon a time an employee of Talis myself. So Kasabi is a new direction, a new effort from Talis, which is a bigger company with fingers in other pies as well.
Yeah, sure. So to give you a bit of background, Talis has been offering its semantic web platform for organisations to use in different ways for quite a few years now. We've built a consulting team around that platform and around supporting people in publishing and managing data in general. What we found in those conversations that there was a need for more of an off-the-shelf service to support this kind of data publishing and data reuse. We found that there was interest in exploring business models around data. So while a lot of organizations are interested or motivated or even mandated to open data up and bring it to the web, a number of other organizations were interested in, could they build a commercial revenue stream off the data that they were curating? So we kind of took all of that in mind and started to put together Kasabi. So it started out as a team that was being incubated within Talis, and Kasabi now is a larger team now that we've actually launched a beta product. So we're kind of taking what we've learned from working with a number of different organizations and trying to create that more self, a self-care environment where people can come and more easily share, connect up, and ultimately build revenue streams off data. So I mean, going back to your other question is, in a number of cases, organizations haven't yet put data online in any form at all. So it's not that there's necessarily always an API and always a way to get some of this data. Some of it's being surfaced for the first time. So by being able to provide more of the infrastructure there, to provide everything from the data hosting, the API development, the support and access to the data via those APIs, all of the statistics, all of that becomes, if it can come off the shelf, then it means that organizations can play much, much quicker and much more low risk environment with opening data up for the people to use.
And it's a more scalable business model for you than one-on-one consulting.
Yes, sure. I think there's some there's some really interesting things that we think we can do with data once it's made more accessible and once we can start to connect it up.
That's an interesting point, the connecting up. I mean, one of the things that underpins Kasabi and a lot of Talis's other activities is this reliance upon and belief in, you know, the standards of the semantic web, things like RDF, things like linked data that people may have heard of. Is that the core part of the differentiating value proposition for Kasabi, this idea of not just providing access to dataset A or dataset B, but actually being able to provide access to some combination of the two?
Yes, very much so. I think that's really where we think we can add value, and I think that's where we think that particular choice of technology will let us do that quicker, faster, and easier than other approaches. So, you know, Talis has been very active in the semantic web community for quite a few years. The platform that backs Kasabi is based on those technologies. So it's based on using RDF. So because we think that that's the best way to start to organize and link up different data sets. So I think in some of the other conversations that you've had in this series, people have mentioned that the really important thing about aggregating data is building context. That no one organization has a complete view of the world, and the more data you can bring in, the more context that you can add, the more valuable that data becomes. And it becomes more valuable because you can start to ask more powerful questions of it. There's more facets to it to support querying, navigation, and analysis. But you have to do more than just create a directory of data sets in order to kind of make that context real. When we put in content on the web, we build context by adding links. You know, we follow links in articles and in blog posts, what have you, in order to find the context, the source material, or additional useful, relevant content. So we think that the best way to build context into data is to introduce those links, to actually connect up different data sources at a fundamental level. Because then when you are querying, then you can follow those links in order to bring in that context. So while we've chosen RDF as the means to do that, that I see that as a technology choice that we've made, but we don't think that's the way that everybody has to consume the data, or even that's the way that they need to primarily manage their data. So while right now, you know, it's the easiest way to get data into Kasabi is as RDF, and we've got some APIs that expose that directly in various ways. We've put work into creating simpler APIs that take advantage of all of that that data linking and that the underlying graph structure of the data, but give access to it in simpler protocols and simpler formats that most developers are happy with.
So one day I might be able to give you an Excel spreadsheet or a dump from my Oracle database.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we have a data team that are already working with data in a wide range of different formats, simple CSV structures that we're converting into RDF to put data into the system. I'm going to come back to your point about belief in the semantic web. I'm not sure I would characterize it as a belief in so much as we found that the technology helps us do certain things faster. It helps us combine data from different sources more easily and more flexibly. It's kind of, for us, it's a kind of proven technology. I think separate to that is belief about how widespread semantic web technologies will become on the web and in that kind of wider vision. But I see those are two very different things. For me, there's a pragmatic choice about this technology works for what we're trying to do, and I would kind of separate out, you know, whether we think there is a whether we think that kind of semantic web vision is going to kind of take hold across the web web itself.
So you would suggest that obviously you would like that broader vision to take hold across the web, but for Kasabi to add value and for the semantic web approach within Kasabi to add value, that doesn't have to happen.
Exactly. And you can see that there's a lot of organizations that are taking the same approach. It's kind of ironic that a lot of those semantic web technologies seem to be proving themselves within the enterprise, inside people's products, faster than actually out on the web. And I think that's because at the core of it, there's many of the same benefits as the kind of NoSQL technologies that a lot of people are playing with now, in that it's schemaless, it's easier to bring different data sets, different data models together into one place, so you can do more rapid iteration around product. But perhaps the more fundamental thing is that it comes with a strong notion of identity, that if you can identify, have unique identifiers for all of the entities, all of the interesting things in your data set, then you can then start to annotate that in different ways. Different people can start to annotate it and contribute their data into the mix. And then you can start to link those different identifiers together in useful ways. And that's where you get the context kind of coming together. And it's where you get the network effects. The web is kind of the best example of a network effect. So we were kind of looking at trying to do the same thing, but with starting from data rather than content. So it's the kind of linking that will let the hub data sets appear. What are the core data sets that people are really interested in and need most frequently in order to contextualize their data? And it really kind of lowers that barrier to entry to contributing new data into the mix as well, because you can start from the data that's already out there and add annotations rather than compiling your own data set and your own set of identifiers and then having to do all of that kind of linking and rationalization step separately.
Okay. Now, I guess, in the web of documents that we have today, there are links, as you said. Effectively, it's a see also type link, and you link from one web page to another, and a human being decides what the link means, what its context is, and applies a whole load of fuzziness and a whole load of sort of learned behaviour to understanding what's going on. That becomes harder, doesn't it, when we begin to talk about links between data? And at one level, you could say, that this concept in this resource is about a place, and this concept in another resource over on the other side is also about a place, therefore we can link the two together. The problem comes that we often haven't defined the data sets very rigorously. So I might be talking about London, meaning Greater London, that place with 10 million people in it. You're talking about the City of London, a much smaller entity. Or it might be dimensions, and I'm talking in metres and you're talking in feet. Mm-hmm. How do we begin to resolve those sorts of problems so that the links don't become actually more trouble than they're worth, more damaging?
Okay, I think there's kind of several aspects to that. I mean, the technology alone, technology alone isn't going to solve the fact that the world is a messy place. So we can't just apply a veneer of technology and kind of magic all of those issues away. And I don't think anything in the semantic web space really promises that. I think if people see that, then it's kind of a misconception.
Yeah.
The kind of ambiguity that you're talking about, where London in my data set is different to London in your data set, actually comes from the fact that all we often have is a label. We just have the name London, and there's no other context around it. If we had a stronger notion of identifier in our data set, so if we at least had a unique ID for London separate to the label, then we could start to link those, and we'd have it's a point to attach more context. So then it can become clear that we're actually talking about different things. But that's almost kind of a bootstrapping problem. So what's interesting for me, and I don't think is made enough of in most semantic web discussions, is that we ought to be able to quickly move from debating about identifiers and how to link them up to annotating each other's data sets. So if you look at the way that some of the linked data sets have kind of grown up, there's some hubs that have appeared quite naturally in there, because there are data sets like DBpedia, which is derived from Wikipedia, which has a great set of identifiers for lots of things that people want to talk about. So we can go through a stage of trying to link together our different notions of London with the identifier for London in DBpedia. But actually, we could just start out by just using that identifier in the first place, and kind of break this pattern that you see coming time and time again, that people start creating their own data sets and they create their own unique identifiers, and then later on they discover, actually, we could get some useful context if only we'd done some rationalization against somebody else's data. So you can see this happening in the geospace. It's been quite interesting. People are using these different terms to describe the problem and how they're solving it, but it's the same issue. So there's lots of different existing geographic identifiers for places. There's lots of startups that are creating new identifiers for places. Facebook's got its place IDs, and there's lots of different services where I'm kind of checking in or rating or reviewing or describing things. And very often they've got their own data sets that they're compiling. And then you see as a kind of next wave emergence of what Yahoo called its concordance system, which was basically an API that lets you map between different identifiers. And I think Factual have done the same thing. They call it crosswalking. So you get this second wave of people realizing that it'd be useful if they could connect up with other sources. But because they've started out with silos, effectively, there's that need for a second stage. And I think what we could get to is to reuse identifiers that are out in the open. And it will it won't take away all of the issues around doing some of that entity recognition and normalization, but it means we're starting from a slightly different standpoint.
And presumably some of the differences might not actually matter very much.
Yes, and I think that's true as well. I mean, so as well as I do the kind of debates that happen in the library community, for example, about how we identify and describe different editions of a book and work and manifestations, all that kind of thing. It's like the paperback version versus the original work and hardback version, and all the different ways that it could be manifested. But really, in most cases, when we're kind of talking about things, we don't need that level of precision. And I think as long as you're aware about where there might be some questions over how well data sets line up, then you can make the appropriate judgment for the use you're putting it to.
And can a data market such as Kasabi play a role in flagging where some of those differences might be? Sort of beware if you try to use the data for this kind of purpose.
I think we could get there. I think what we focused on in the short term is trying to identify useful starting points for data. So it's what I often refer to as backbone data sets. So if we look across different domains, then what are the key things that people want to refer to or describe? Everything from roads and schools and films, all kinds of things. We've kind of prioritized trying to pull together data sets in those different domains to provide that backbone which people can then start to annotate or link their data. So I think that's where we would try and add some value initially in helping people build that context, build those links. And I think later on we can maybe start to solve some of those. I guess they're kind of provenance issues. It's kind of how well can you trust the data? How do you know how well it could be applied in different circumstances?
Yes, yes, indeed. And so coming back to Kasabi itself then, how broad are your data interests at the moment? Will you take any data about anything from anywhere, or are you focusing down on particular verticals or particular geographies?
So as it stands today, it's a horizontal marketplace. So the purpose of the beta was really putting all of these tools into people's hands and letting them try it out. They can put whatever data, as long as you've got the rights to publish that data or republish it, then you can put whatever you want into Kasabi. And then we have, like I say, a standard set of APIs that will work against any of those data sources. The kinds of data that we've got in there at the moment, that we've seeded the marketplace with a number of data sets that we were already working with at Talis. So there's a lot that's come from DataGov UK and other government sources that we had readily available. We've also explored going deeper in a few different domains most recently. So we've been exploring adding more transport-related data, food-related data. But it's a real mix, really, different sources. And we're just encouraging people to try out the platform and see how well it works for them.
And what do you think, what do you expect the balance to be between people putting data in so they or others can work with it and working with the data that you've already provided?
So I think the inevitably it's going to be a read mostly environment. I think that's true of most data sets. There are many more people interested in accessing data than there are in actually publishing data. So I think we'd expect to see more growth on that the developer side initially before adding lots more sources. And I think what we're trying to do is, well, anyone can come along now and just and use Kasabi to put whatever data in they like. We're keen to talk to various organisations to see how we can help them add value to their data by doing this process of linking and contextualising.
And what is the business model? I mean, if a lot of the data that's there at the moment is freely available data, who's paying for what?
Okay, so at the moment, whilst we're in beta, all of Kasabi is available for free, and that's one of the reasons why we focused on open data, freely accessible data. But right now on the site, when people come and sign up, there's a series of pricing plans on there, which are tiered based on the level of access that you want to take on the data. So while we're not charging anyone during the beta period, the intention is you will pay for the level of service you take on the data in the marketplace. So if you're making a very large number of requests, API requests, you'll need a higher plan. If you're making a very small number of requests, then you can just use it for free or very low cost. There's other features that become available on the different pricing plans, but that's how we're positioning the kind of marketplace aspect of Kasabi.
And what about on the data provision side? Would people pay you to put data in, or would you pay people to give you data?
We consider all of those options. I think it's fair to say that we're approaching this quite cautiously. It feels to me like there's still a lot of shake-up to be done around how people are pricing and commercializing data. We've talked to a lot of different data providers, a number of which have already got successful businesses in various domains, talk about how they currently price and license their data, the different models they're using. And even if you just look at the way that people are commercializing data online now, there's a lot of different models and requirements. And so what we don't want to do is lock any model out, if you see what I mean. We want to kind of make sure that people have got a certain amount of choice in how they surface the data. So we don't charge people for putting data into Kasabi. So publishing is free. So we're looking to So our revenue model we built on how the data is subsequently used. So you know, different plans give you different number of credits, which turn into number of API requests. If we offer commercial data, then it will cost you more credits per API request to access that data, and that turns into a royalty for the data publisher. But we're also keen to not lock out this this strand of open data publishing that we see coming from kind of the government and public sector. So there I kind of describe that as a sponsorship model. So there's a need or a desire to have that data be accessible and be available free at the point of use. So one of the models that we're offering is that the data publisher could use Kasabi to publish their data, and they pay us to make that service available, which means that it's free for developers. So there's kind of two very different models that we're trying to support within the marketplace.
Okay, so the data provider then would effectively be buying the credits that I would use to consume their data.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And there's lots of other ways that we could build on that. But those are the kind of two models that we think are most prevalent at the moment.
And I mean, clearly this is a very early stage for Kasabi and for the market itself, but how are the conversations going in terms of deciding what a fact is worth?
That's interesting. So I've done quite a lot of work to explore that as much as possible using pricing information that is readily available. So I went through not long ago and surveyed as many different commercial APIs as possible to look at the different ways that people are licensing and pricing data, look at the price points they're using, to see if I could draw anything from that. The main thing I took from that is that it's pretty clear that there are some bandings emerging. And not in the sense of what precise price points, but there seem to be three main categories of data that were being offered under commercial APIs, and that they kind of clustered around three very different price points. So at the very bottom tier, there was data that was really, really commoditized. So it was very, it was little more than kind of being able to identify things. Kind of really just kind of simple identifiers, kind of very simple reference information about things. The kind of next tier up adds more depth to that, so much more information available, you know, more detail about each entity. What the kind of higher pricing tier is, the kind of stuff that drives decision support. So data that is going to help me make a better business decision right now, or I need to drive my business, carries a higher premium than just being able to find a unique identifier for a country or for a particular company. So what I think is that we're kind of at the early stage in how how that all gets. You know, what figures will be on against access to the different types of data, but there's pretty clear that there are different categories, and it feels like there's already some commoditization on the very low end, and I think that's partly driven by recognition that having that kind of basic identifier information out there, you know, knowing that there is a company with a certain name, it's useful to have that be available free or very, very low cost, because it supports this kind of linking and contextualization of data. But at the opposite extreme, when you get into that kind of decision support data, people are willing to pay a lot more for that, because it's driving a specific business need. And I think you can also add more real-time event-driven data into that as well. I mean, how, whether that's a separate tier to the kind of decision support stuff, I don't know. But it's kind of interesting to do that analysis and see how it pans out. So the way I kind of position it in Kasabi is that people are paying for the service they're getting on the data. So even if the data itself is free, there's useful services that can be made available on it. So if that data has been linked up and connected up in some way so that the context is more readily accessible, then I think people will pay to access it in that form. And I think people will pay to make sure that the data stays available as well, that kind of sustainability access. Because I think you see that data is put up online for free without any idea what the sustainability model is, and then it gets taken down again. Maybe one answer to that is having easier ways for people to commercialize the data. But if the data itself is kind of portable and reusable, then people can be using it in a lot of different platforms.
And, it's not just people taking data down, it's people leaving it online and letting it go stale. The latest census, and it's actually from 18-something rather than 2000-something.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so when we were putting together Kasabi and kind of, what information do we what metadata about data sets did we think we needed to make readily accessible, there was an immediate kind of checklist that I had in mind just from working with data myself, things that I was continually frustrated and not being able to find out. So who's actually published some data, where it's come from, when it was published or when it was last updated, and importantly, what's the license associated with it. We've tried to make all of that be readily accessible in Kasabi so that developers don't have to struggle to get those questions answered. And in fact, right now, you can't publish a data set in Kasabi unless you've chosen a license. We can't necessarily guide people towards the right license, but you have to choose one. And so we've configured all of the common licenses that we've seen people been using, everything from the kind of Creative Commons and Open Data licenses through to the Open Government license, for example.
And presumably I could also choose a commercial license.
Yeah, sure. So that because everything's free in the beta, we haven't unveiled this, but for commercial data sets, then we want to let people put in their own terms and conditions. We recognise that particularly organisations that are approaching publishing data for the first time, they're quite cautious about the terms under which that data is used and reused. So we want to help them feel more comfortable by letting them put in whatever terms they think are appropriate, making those terms clearly available to developers so they can see before they start to use the data. We think it makes it more accessible. But I think what I certainly hope will happen within the marketplace is that with more open access or more visibility on those specific licensing terms, there'll be a convergence. So there's been lots of convergence around what makes a good open license, but there aren't any off-the-shelf licenses for commercial use or commercial data. There's still a big question mark for many people over what constitutes commercial use at all, which can make people shy away from using certain data sets. So I'm hoping that we can start to help guide data publishers towards kind of best practices for the way that they make their data available for reuse. But I think it kind of feels like there's a journey there for lots of organisations.
Presumably you could look at using financial rewards there too. There's nothing wrong with a commercial license, but if you choose one of these sort of model licenses that we've prepared, there's either you get more per use from end users, or we charge you less than we would if you were using your own license.
Yes, that's one way to do it. Another approach, which is maybe a little bit gentler, is making it very clear about how specific licensing terms can hinder usage. So one of the things that we've been working towards in Kasabi, and is one of the reasons why we're using the semantic web technology and using data that's got a strong notional identity is to want to make it easy for people to remix data sets directly in Kasabi. So be able to pick and choose a number of different data sets and create a new derived data set from it. That could just be a simple merge, or it could be extracts of different data sets to create something new. So and a lot of our work on a back-end platform recently has been about enabling us to do that easier and easier. So if somebody is using some commercial licensing terms that preclude reuse in certain contexts, it means they won't be able to use those features. It will be, people won't be able to remix their data as widely as they might hope. And so that I think that will help create a further incentive that if they're willing to adjust the licensing terms, then it gives gives developers new ways to work with the data, and that could turn into an improved bottom line in terms of overall usage.
And can Kasabi itself prevent those uses that the license doesn't permit?
So there are. So what we're doing is we can do some of that, but at a very coarse level. When you sign up and use a data set as a developer, you're agreeing to the terms of use, and so as an intermediary, we can't monitor all of that downstream usage. So we can make it visible to publishers who's using the data and how often. So we're not going to get in the business of doing kind of monitoring for infringement, but if one of the ways that we're managing licenses is to call out specific attributes, the kinds of things that you see in the Creative Commons licenses, whether you can use whether you can create derivatives or whether there's share alike provisions, that kind of thing. So by classifying the licenses, we can identify whether data sets can be usefully remixed in these different ways. So that might that limits some direct usage in Kasabi, but ultimately it's up to the developers to kind of obey the strict letter of the licensing terms.
And in terms of the way that developers are using these data sets to remix, is this all being done through an API, or are they actually querying Kasabi and then downloading data to use somewhere else?
So we've prioritized the API access. And the reason for doing that is we think that's we can add more value there than just doing simple data set downloads. I mean, that's something that we're thinking about adding, but I think for me as a developer, knowing that I'm always getting the most up-to-date version of some data is really important. I guess it depends on the kinds of applications you're building. If I'm building a mobile app, then I want the current data. If I'm doing some big data analysis, then maybe I need to get the whole data set in order to drive that. We've prioritized the kind of API-driven access at the moment, so that we can offer fresher data to developers. But we certainly haven't ruled out doing more downloads in different forms.
And you mentioned the three layers of data and the different pricing levels they might attract, suggesting that decision-supporting data was the most valuable. Mm-hmm. To what extent do you see Kasabi moving towards actually offering applications that answer questions and support decisions directly?
I don't think that's not really on our radar at the moment. I think there's enough to be done in developing the services we're offering now further, and in being able to expose this better tooling to support remixing and aggregation of data. So in a startup you never want to rule anything out, but I think what we're keen to do is work with developers that have specific problems that they need to solve, whether that means data that they need to find or particular kinds of queries or analysis that you want to do on the data, and kind of work directly with them to support that, rather than the next tier up, which is that kind of decision support. So I think there will be the kinds of data that we'll have in Kasabi will very much support that kind of application, but I don't think we're going to get into building executive dashboards for use within an enterprise. I think where we think we can really add value and where our platform will work best is in bringing together lots of different disparate data sets, in combining those and then projecting that out in lots of different ways.
So how do you set about growing then? You're in beta. A lot of the data you have is the open content that has been made available by people like the government. How do you set about growing and attracting the paying data and the paying users as you move forward?
In the past we've done a number of Hack Day events where we put together data for different purposes and work with developers. I mean, that's a good way for developers to get an idea about how Kasabi can help them, but it also gives us some great insight into the kinds of things that developers are interested in building. And we've carried that forward. So we're working with a number of different developers at the moment who are building data-driven applications. They're using Kasabi as the source for that. So we're supporting them directly, by helping them find the data that they need, and make sure they can get the most from Kasabi, because I think that will help them understand better how they can use the system. But again, gives us some insight into ways that we can develop the system further to support them. So that's on the consumption side. On the publishing side, then we already have a lot of great organizations that we've been working with through the consulting arm of Talis, and so we're continuing to develop that, to explore with those organizations whether they want to open data for free or whether they want to build a commercial business off it.
Okay, and in terms of branding then, there's clearly scope for some fuzziness here, in that there's a Kasabi brand. There's also the brands of all of the data providers, the Ordnance Survey, British Library, whoever it may be. Mm-hmm. And then there's also perhaps sort of fused brands where you're combining and aggregating data. How do you begin to manage that to project clarity but also authority to potential end users, because presumably the brands of the organisations providing data through Kasabi are a potential draw?
Yes, absolutely, and we would certainly want to make sure that those brands stay visible when data comes into Kasabi. So the marketplace today, it's got our brand on it, I think that's important because we're the intermediary, we're the service provider. Ultimately, it's we will have a commercial relationship with developers. They need to know where that service is coming from. But we try to make sure that the brands of the individual data providers are visible and remain visible in Kasabi. So from looking at any data set, then that can be branded up however the data publisher wants. So they've got control over things like logo and description and developer documentation, so that can help them describe where the data comes from and how it's been put together. It's easy enough to find other data from the same source. So we kind of retain that branding. One element of what we've been doing from the outset, but has perhaps not been that visible, is also offering some of the features that we've put together as a branded solution that can be integrated with a publisher's own site. So it doesn't have to be that they only publish data into Kasabi. They could be in Kasabi, but still have many of those APIs and other features available within their own site. So the kind of linked data views that on the data, and even all of the APIs can be made available at a publisher's own domain. So if they want to, they want to be in the marketplace because they think it gives them some extra visibility, then they can do that. But we can also give them more of a branded presence as well. So we're not requiring them to, you know, make a decision about how, you know, whether they want to drop their brand or lose their brand or dilute it in some way. We want to just kind of support them in getting the data online. And I think, you know, we have to recognize that this whole space is in quite an early stage. And when organizations are servicing data, then it's quite natural that they want to have their brand on it. So if they want to do that within their own site, then we want to support that. We think there's some extra benefits of being able to then mix that data with other sources in Kasabi. And they're going to have both of those options. It's not an either or. It's not you put it on your own site or you're in the marketplace. You can do both. You can do both very easily.
Right, good. So conscious of the time, so just before we wrap up, the concept of a data market, the label data market, is one that's attracting quite a lot of attention at the moment, and it's being applied to things like Kasabi and a range of other offerings as well that are doing quite different things. As someone who's been labelled as a data market, what do you think of the term? Does it usefully describe you? Does it usefully describe the others in the space? Or is it just another odd label?
I think I've kind of flip-flopped on that a couple of times over the past 18 months or so. So I think we would definitely describe ourselves as a data marketplace. And I think as a number of other players, you know, many of whom you've already spoke to in this series, kind of come online, it's pretty clear that people have got different ideas about what that actually means. So for a time, I was wondering whether, you know, it was a term to avoid because it did seem to be, I guess, a little bit diluted, and just in the sense that there were some such wildly different propositions, different ways that people were exploring the space, that maybe the term didn't have a great deal of value. I mean, if you wanted to take a strict view of the marketplace, then I see that in some cases people would define a marketplace as somewhere where I could go and bid for data, and win out against somebody else and get it as the price I'm happy to pay for. I don't see anyone really doing that aspect of the marketplace at the moment. There's some really interesting things going on around the kinds of things that we're doing to support publishing and commercialization of data, interesting things going on in particular vertical segments or around collaboration around data. So I think it's just, the truth is, it's just such an early stage for this category that I think it will take time for things to evolve. It's pretty clear that there's some kind of opportunity here. There's lots of people interested in trying to make data more accessible and more sustainable in different ways. So where I am now, I think they're very, very, very happy to be labelled a data marketplace. I think there's a lot of energy in this space at the moment. I think there's a lot of people doing some really interesting things. I think over time, I think we'll find that people want to differentiate themselves more, and then we might find that there's, things evolve, things change, and people kind of drop out of the category.
And is the commercial opportunity big enough for the number of people who are chasing after it just now?
That remains to be seen, doesn't it, Paul? I think there's... one view is that this could be a winner-takes-all proposition, that somebody will come in, grow really fast, and the network effects will mean that there is one source for all this data, one place that people go to, what you want to call it, the iTunes or Amazon or whatever, for data. Maybe that will happen. I kind of like to think that that there's enough space, there's enough different domains, there's enough different ways about adding value around data, that there's scope for all of us to be continuing to work in that space.
Good. Well, I look forward to finding out which of those possibilities ends up to be the right one. As you say, we don't know yet. It's an early stage in the process. I look forward to finding out. So thank you very much, Lee, for telling us about Kasabi and what you're up to at the moment.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
You're back.